Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prishkintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Thank you for joining us today. We get by with little help from our friends.
Oh, yes, the Donalana Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus, or just hop on over there for some good food and beverages.
Yes, that's a good thing to do in the summertime. Yeah, it is sliding into summer. It isn't officially summer yet, but it's sliding.
Oh, we're
there.
So close. I'm finally. Well, the thing is, by the time you hit the solstice, the days actually start getting shorter.
Yeah, so this is it.
Now.
Yeah, it's getting warm. And after a rather cold and wet spring, my poor tomato plants, the peppers look fine for some reason. The tomatoes are saying what's going on. And I think they're looking for some sunshine. Yes, they are.
Well, it's certainly green around here.
Well, so, Donna, how was your weekend?
I did a lot of pruning.
Pruning?
Sawing off branches, finding, it was good exercise.
Oh, good for you.
Yep.
And aren't the peonies lovely this year?
Oh, the irises are at the end and the peonies, boom.
Boom.
They're everywhere.
It was a good Irish year, too. I'm a whole mile north of town. I think I must be in a different climate zone up there.
You're a little colder.
Irises are just absolutely gorgeous, and the peonies are gorgeous. And you don't have to have necessarily a farm or a big garden or anything to enjoy flowers, because on the way to the studio this morning, I walked through I walked through this little thing. It's a little space between buildings in downtown Ames that they had it into a little park. It's called the Cynthia Duff Park or Cynthia Duff Plaza. It's a little space between two buildings, and it's a good way to get from the parking lot
to Main Street.
On Main Street. Yeah. And I suppose you call that a pocket park, and, bench and some trees and things. But among all the other nice plantings, I noticed a spiderwort. And that whenever I see one, it just kind of makes me smile. It's the prettiest blue. It's a prairie plant, actually, and it's a kind of a wet, a little bit of shade kind of tolerating prairie plant. So a spiderwort is growing in downtown Ames, and you can go down there and enjoy it, along with some other stuff there.
Do you remember we had Beth Wilbur, the Florabella flower lady, and she talked about how to pick peonies before open, and what was it? You pick them, but at what point?
When they're
not too tight, but they're just about to open?
Yeah, I was surprised. Florists can do such a wonderful job. There's
so
all kinds of tricks. All kinds of tricks.
And wraps them in newspaper and puts them in the refrigerator.
Is
that right?
Yeah.
I might try doing a little of that extending.
Thanks for bringing
season.
That up. I forgot that you pick it when it's in its ball stage.
Loose. It has to be loose, I'm sure.
Just when there's a little pink showing, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right,
too early, and it might not work.
Oh, yes.
I'm gonna make an experiment.
Good. Peonies. I like peonies. Oh, we kind of went back to the Stone Age at our farm. We had some road construction going on, and the nice person that did some moving around of the heavy equipment and the heavy dirt and everything, unfortunately, sliced our landline. Yes, we still have a landline, and that's how we're connected to the world. I'm sure everyone feels sorry for us, but I did not mind a weekend without. Well, I still had a cell phone, but I didn't mind a whole weekend without connection every single
internet.
Minute.
No internet. Oh, gee, too bad.
Oh, gee, too. There was so much to
Good
do
thing
outside.
It was the weekend, though, right?
There's too much to do outside. You don't need.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're back up and running now. Yeah. Well, today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to start out here by talking a little bit about Farmer's Market because, I like Farmer's Market.
We had a We had a good Saturday for the farmer's market,
yeah,
even.
Yeah, it actually started out a little rainy, which is kind of nice. It kind of weeds out the...
But it didn't do much more than spit.
No, it just kind of made us wet for the first half hour or so. And that kind of, you know, thinned things out for a while. But I took that opportunity. I will let you know that I vended at this market, and I seldom get to go out and visit everybody else because I'm busy slinging vegetables, you know, and plants. But I took that little rainy hiatus to go up and down and kind of take a note of who was there. We're kind of in a month into farmer's market now, and the first excitement of, oh, everybody coming is off. And there were other events. I know a lot of the food truck vendors were at other events in Scandinavian Days was going on and some events in Campustown here in Ames. And so it wasn't as full as could be, but I think we've got a dandy market here. And I just thought, I'm just going to take you on a little stroll up and down Main Street, and this is what you can see here. Think of this as a poem to vendors. Mm-hmm. Starting from the east here, and it's a two-block area. My goodness. Okay.
On here, both sides of the street.
Both sides of the street. Yeah. Here are the people. Burgie's Coffee. Knob Hill Farm. They're a new vendor this year. Grand View Beef. Dusty Hill Farm. Oh, so many pretty flowers, plants, and vegetables. Larry and Darla Fance have been coming for years. Jules Country Kitchen. Walnut Creek Farm. Another longtime vendor, David Keller. Oh, good stuff over there. He does honey, and all kind of vegetables. Little Pies, a new vendor this year. Little Pies, if you want a bite-sized pie to fit in your hand. There you go, Little Pies. Suzette's Sewing. Potholders, bibs, towels. The Food at First booth is there just for information, and they take donations. Information booth. Popcorn, and in more colors and tastes than you'd ever thought of. These are specialty popcorn things. Carlos's Tacos, another award-winning,
yes,
real fun
popular
bunch of people. Oh, yes.
Food truck.
India Delights. Oh, if you want a good Indian
another
meal.
Food truck.
Oh, another food truck. Sister Smoothie and Baked by Beth. Beth is a fine baker, and her daughters have a little side business. Actually, it's really growing up now. They have a booth called Sister Smoothies.
Cutest little cart.
Cutest cart. It's great, and you can get lots of good things to drink there. Purple Ribbon Beef. Mini Donuts. Can't get through a Saturday morning without Mini Donuts. Lough, L-O-H, Coffee and Lemonade. And Ivy Creek, Gluten-Free Bakery. That's new this year, I think. I haven't had
it. It looked pretty good.
Yeah. That's only one side. Here's the other side. Coming back down the street, Coaster's Kitchen. They do breakfast, they do pies. Meow Acres, a fine farm that does a lot of...
Catnip, right?
Well, I certainly have catnip. Then there's a consortium of artists, crafty folks. There's fabric, creatures, there's pottery. And for those of you who have a really, really bad green thumb, there's this woman that knits cactus, so you can have a little crocheted knitted cactus sitting in a pot, and it can keep you company. You don't even have to water it.
Can't kill it.
Yep. No. And pottery by Valerie Williams. Her little business is called The Daily Dish. Okay. At Fisher's Farm, plants and flowers, jewelry. Jewelry. A nice woman there makes all kinds of jewelry. And she, now, if you have a need for this, there it is. It's a Kleenex box, little fabric Kleenex box that's made to look like a sofa. You know? Yeah. So if you need one of those.
Yeah.
And you can probably get it
hard
in your...
Hard to find item.
And you can get it in your team colors, too. The Sweet Shop of Ames, and that's Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E, Shoppy of Ames. Good little chocolatey bits there. Stargrass Farms. Fresh Squeezed Lemonade. They come all the way from Grinnell. Oh, I like their lemonade along about late in the day. Joy Grow Mushrooms. Two Rivers Bread Company. Ooh, that's good bread. baked potato bags. Who would think? There's a woman selling these things, and I have to. We'll have to ask her
because that is beyond my culinary expertise. I don't know what a baked potato bag is.
I don't know, and she has other fabric things, pot holders and things.
Can't imagine you bake in the bag.
I don't know. Maybe you just keep the potatoes in the bag. She also sells those. And I think most of us have one, or we should have one. One of those recycled tubes that you put in, hang it up in your kitchen and stuff
for
it full
the recycled
of
bags.
Recycled
yes.
bags. How can you have a kitchen without one of those? That's good. Onion Creek Farm is there, too. Ryman Gardens was there just as a service organization. They had a butterfly display there, talking about their events. Lee's Greens has a greenhouse. So, boy, oh, boy, we had lots of good stuff to eat.
And I want to announce they had their first greenhouse tomatoes.
Oh, and you tried some.
And, you know, after a winter of cardboard tomatoes, which I try not to eat, even the greenhouse ones taste really good. And they are quite beautiful. They had baskets of multicolored cherry tomatoes and then a really nice bin of full-size tomatoes. Very exciting.
Three cheers for Lee's Greens. Lost Lake Cheese. We'll talk about them in a little while here. Kringla. There's a little group there selling Kringla in many different flavors called the Knotted Dough Company.
Kringla is, it's basically a Swedish pastry. Is it just dough with sugar on it?
I don't know. We'll have to look up.
I've never made them.
No. It's not. It doesn't have sugar on it. It's more. It's like cream. It's a more of a heavier.
It's a sweet.
It's a sweet.
Okay.
But it's more of a. It's made to dunk in coffee. I don't know. We'll have a Kringla expert on later because I certainly don't know about Kringla. And then Mustard Seed Farm was there. Yeah, Kringlas are kind of curled into one another into little figure eights.
Is it really a Swedish pastry or is it an Iowa Swedish pastry?
It's Scandinavian in general.
Scandinavian.
I don't know what.
I will check with my Scandinavian sources. Let's see. We should do a Kringla show sometime.
Oh, I think so. Well, I know for at one time, Story City, north of us, there that's quite a Scandinavian community.
Could be
there.
The Kringla Center of North America.
Yeah, you can get Kringla there. Very good cut. And at one time, I know even the McDonald's in that town had Kringla for sale. So, see? Huh?
Oh, boy.
Anyway, that was kind of a romp down Main Street here. Going back and forth, up and down the farmer's market.
I saw some zucchini at Lee's Greens. That's probably Hat House. But also plenty of asparagus, some rhubarb, spring onions, lots of radishes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's the beginning. The beginning of the vegetable season.
Yeah, a lot of the other vegetable farmers there had all that kind of stuff. And then of course, you always have to deal with the folks that sleep late and march up to your booth and say, "Where is all the rhubarb?" And of course, that stuff goes fast. Be careful, people. You have to get there for the bargains early.
Because
rhubarb does sell.
You know what else
really
goes
fast.
Really fast? So, Lost Lake Farm, our favorite cheesemaker, who has his own cows and does a beautiful job. He has a new product. Feta cheese.
Feta.
Oh, it's good.
I thought you had to be Italian to make feta cheese.
No, it's not. It's Greek.
Oh, I thought you had to be Greek to make feta cheese.
Well, Kevin seems to be, because he has his all grass-fed dairy, and it's not like he's buying milk. He milks the cows, he feeds the cows, and then he makes the cheese. And this feta, because the milk is so delicious, is very creamy. And I have to say, it's one of the finest fetas I have ever tasted. But you must get there early, right? It's really, really good.
I had some of that, too. I didn't know feta could taste like that. I thought feta was kind of this interesting stuff you sprinkled on your salad, and it was in a salty brine. And, yeah, it's okay.
This is salty, and it is a full-fat feta. I just ate it with the with the tomatoes I got from Lee's Greens because it was so good. But there are wonderful things you can do with feta cheese. besides just eat it. And it's creamy, so it's spreadable. A classic thing that I will probably do is because I intend to eat this feta a lot this summer. It's a real treat. You can cut it into smaller cubes, like half inch, and submerge it in olive oil with some raw garlic, some fresh basil or oregano, and let it just sit. And peppers, too. And let it marinate and then serve it that way. And be sure to eat the olive oil, too, on different things. It's very, very good. Also, feta can be melted, like a really good...
I never tried that.
Yeah. I once did a... I think I used an English muffin, but something sort of toasty. I spread a little olive oil on it, put an egg on it, so the toast has to be big enough to hold the egg, and then I roasted it and the feta cheese on top with some herbs, I think probably dried oregano, salt, and pepper maybe, or some red pepper flakes too. And then you just broil it in the hot oven so the egg cooks and the feta cheese melts, and it's like an open-faced sandwich.
Oh,
and of course, feta is used in all kinds of, spanakopita, which is a phyllo dough but this feta is maybe too good for that. I don't know. It's really, really good. Oh. But you have to get early at the farmer's market to get it. I hope Kevin's making more and more of it. It's really, really a treat.
It's nice to have local cheese. Oh, yeah. Now, let's back up to the feta thing that you said you put in the oven with an egg in it. We were discussing this the other day, and we came across a term. What you do when you bake eggs, when you just bake a raw egg. There's a term for that. It's called sheared.
Sheared, I think.
Sheared. S-H-I-R-R-E-D. And I've never done that. I've only run across that word in crossword puzzles. So I figured they invented it for crossword puzzles. But you really can bake an egg.
I wonder, I just call it baking an egg. I think is typically in a container of some sort. I mean, because the hard part, once you crack the egg, controlling it is a little awkward. So either you do it like in a custard cup, or there are other, I don't know how they do it. They make them there's a little mold that must contain it or something that you can put on the griddle and cook that. I don't know. They do this on a fast food line where they're cooking a lot of eggs, and it comes out looking like an egg McMuffin, that kind of. Sheared as opposed to poaching, because there's no liquid involved.
Very good. A sheared.
Fried, egg. Sheared, baked, poached.
Eggs.
Eggs. We love our eggs. Speaking of eggs, chickens.
Oh.
Lana is a chicken farmer.
Well, a small flock. So all you backyard chicken farmers, we should get together and have, I'm sure that there's things that we could tell each other. You learn more about chickens and life and death and pleasures
Since we didn't learn from our grandmothers how to keep chickens, we kind of have to reaccumulate all the wisdom of how to do it. So Lana has a few good tricks.
I do.
This year.
Yeah, I mentioned grandmothers. I think they would have been glad to tell us, but I'd be darned if I was going to listen when I was growing up. Me, I'll never have chickens. Why would I want chickens? Well, so I have chickens now. I have 14 old girls, they're 2 years old now, still
that
laying.
Made it past the minks and the weasels this year.
Kind of the last hoorah. And they're older, but they're still laying. They're there. And the trick, and I have 28 new, I got little chicks a month and a half ago.
Did they come in the mail?
No. I went to the feed store and picked them up. I don't know if they're still doing that.
I don't know. It just sounds alarming to me.
Right? I have gotten chicks in the mail years ago, and the post office always seems a little huffy about that because they have to listen to the peep, 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 peep,
well,
peep all day.
Well, it's kind of like a life and death thing,
It is.
You don't want to deliver a box of dead baby chicks. That's yucky.
Shake them and they peep. They're okay. They're actually pretty good little things. Okay. Now, so what I have now is 28 baby chicks. Like I said, I got them a month and a half ago. And usually I just make a little corner in the chicken house and have a little girl light there and let them grow up for a while because they kind of need their own little space to grow a little bit before you put them out in the main grown-up chicken house. But I thought, aha, I have a bigger space and a little easier to take care of. I have a greenhouse in my basement. It's on the south side of the house. It opens up. The windows are the south side. So I made a little chicken nursery down there with a light. And of course, they show up. Yes, they did show up in a little box. Actually, two boxes because there was 28 of them. And they're just cuter than bugs when you first get them, and they're fuzzy. And they toddled around just fine. Actually, for getting 28 chickens, my survival rate was very good. The idea that some don't make it, well, I'm used to that. There was, out of all those, I started out with 29. One of them didn't make it through the first night, so heaven knows what that was about. But you have to be prepared for that. Okay. Grow up these chickens.
They're delicate.
They grow like weeds once they find the baby
the food,
chick food.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And one thing I've done, too, is now, my chickens don't just get the chicken feed from out of the bag, even though I do feed them.
Quick grow, it's called.
Good stuff. I always, after about a week, I start feeding them lots of greens. I mean, good heavens, spring is here. There are weeds all over the place. And the first thing I feed them is a weed that is all over my garden, and it's called, of all things, chickweed. It's a little low-growing thing, tiny little leaves, and I think that's why they
call
it.
So you just pick that and put it in the pen for them.
Oh, and they, like, consume it really fast.
These are coddled little chickies.
And it's not just that. By the time they're kind of two-thirds or a third grown now, and by that, they'll eat anything. Actually, even the creeping Charlie, although that's not the first thing they eat, but they get a pail of greens from me with my love every day. And so I've been doing that for a month and a half. Now, the trick is, and Donna and I have discussed this, moving the new chicks in with the old chicks.
Yeah, the old girls, they don't take kindly to this new flock.
No. They are creatures of habit. And I don't want to, like, butcher or get rid of the old ones. They're still laying.
When I used to do that, this was always a very anxiety provoking moment, you know, because the big girls go after the little girls, and then there's blood. And once there's blood, chickens respond to blood. As soon as there's one with a peck, they all jump on that one. It's a little gnarly.
I think you can consider this the Donalana, again, another chapter in the Donalana Kitchen tooth and claw department.
Blood sport. Yep.
Yeah, chickens. Chickens are carnivores. Yes, they are.
So Lana has this brilliant solution to this. Ta-da! Are you ready, all you chicken raisers?
All right. Now, I don't know where I learned this, but it's worked for me for years. Put the little chicks into the hen house with the big chicks after everyone has gone to bed and the light is out. Everyone's on the roost sleeping.
At night.
The little ones are kind of sleepy and groggy. I push them into a couple big boxes and carry them out to the hen house and just kind of dump them in there, and they peep a little bit. But if you introduce little chicks to big chickens, at night, when everyone's sleeping, they wake up in the morning and they get along. I think it's because chickens have a lot of skills, and I admire chickens, but chickens do not have long memories, you know? So every day is a new day for a chicken. The sun comes up and they look around and they don't...
They don't realize this is a new addition. Here they are.
Yeah.
Well, that's excellent.
It seems to
no
work.
So no bloodshed, no...
Fine. Just fine. Of course, there's still a trick of making sure the little ones know where home is, because they do go out in the pen, and they can go in and out of the door. But I don't know whether this happened or not, or whether this helped or not. But in my little chicken nursery in the basement, I got them used to going into a box with a hole cut into it with a light in it. So they were always looking for a doorway to go to the light. So that's what they have. In the late afternoon at night, a light comes on in the chicken house and stays
on. And then they know to go in.
It does help.
Well, maybe they'll also follow the big girls in now.
Yeah, I think so. This has been a fine year of acclimatizing them to one another.
Knockwood, let's hope the weasels don't come.
Oh, my. We've got a big summer ahead of us, but the transition to The Big Hen House was a roaring success this year. Oh, if anybody else has some chicken advice, we always like to hear from you folks out there. You can email us at khoiradio@gmail.com and put Donalana Kitchen or chickens or something in the title line up there. And if you have any information or anything you'd like to share, please do. We love to hear from you. Yes, we do. This is KHOI. This is Donalana Kitchen, and this is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. A little jig to get you in the mood for summer there. There we go. Yes. We are talking about good things to eat. We talked a little bit about all the good stuff at Farmer's Market and feta. Feta. Who would have thought? Feta.
Feta here. Cheese. Yes.
Oh, all right.
Really, really good local feta cheese made from grass-fed cows at Lost Lake Farm. You can get it at the downtown Farmer's Market in Ames.
Yum.
Among other places.
Yum. Well, we're always kicking around the kitchen here, and I get good information from Donna. Let's go back to the archives and see what she's got to say about good things to eat. Meanwhile, Donna, thanks for the panna cotta. This woman makes really nice panna cotta, which is just a lovely, lovely thing. And it had some black currant sauce stuff to put over the top of it, but the panna cotta itself, and Donna is a wizard with this sort of thing.
You know,
tell
why?
Me the
because
flavoring.
Panna cotta is really easy.
Well, but you do it good. But the flavoring in to go with the black currant sauce on the top, there was something that made that panna cotta really good.
Well, I think we do have a panna cotta recipe in the archives, but you can change the flavoring to suit your mood. You know, panna cotta is an Italian classic. Think of it as vanilla cream-based jello. It is a gelatin base. You try to not make it too rubbery. It should be kind of soft, but it is moldable if you want to do that. I usually put it just in a custard cup or, you know, something like that, because unmolding can be, it's not easy, especially in the warm weather. You know, by the time you warm the mold up, although I have a great collection of, you know, the kind of 50s and 60s old jello molds. They are fun when one has the patience. So this panna cotta was, instead of flavoring with vanilla, which is the traditional, which is always good, I used black currant leaf. Not red currants, only black currants. I have a bush in the front yard. And so you take your milk and cream and you you steep the leaves in it. You know, you bring it to just under a boil, let the leaves sit in it. I actually let them sit. I cool it down a little and then I let it sit overnight in the fridge and then strain it off and squeeze those leaves out really good to get every bit of flavor out of them. It's subtle, but it's mm-hmm. very nice. And then I topped it with, of course, black currants. But with the black currants, of course, I put a little bit of black pepper because I like that with my fruits. And then I used yuzu jelly. That's Y-U-Z-U. Now, yuzu is a Japanese citrus. It's very like lemon, but it's like beyond lemon.
It's almost bitter. It just kind of hits you right between the eyes.
Oh, I just love it. It could be my favorite citrus if there is such a thing. So here's how you get yuzu in Ames. There is the Asian Food Mart that's way out on Grand, is it? West of the college.
Oh, out of Lincoln Way.
Yes, sorry. Yes, out Lincoln Way. And in there, there's a product called Citron something. It's how the Koreans have it is it's kind of like an orange marmalade, but it's made with yuzu. So it's traditional in citron tea, it's called. But it's a jar like marmalade, and how they drink it, and it's delicious this way, is you just warm up some hot water and put a spoonful of it and, you know, mix it in and make a beverage. But, I mean, it has the citron, the yuzu peels in it, and it's very sweet. So for my black currant jelly, instead of adding sugar, I added the yuzu marmalade, basically, and just that together was
that
a lovely topping on the
panna
cotta.
It was lovely. Yuzu.
Y-U-Z-U.
Yuzu.
It's used a lot in Japanese food and citrus. I mean, sushi.
Sushi.
And sushi.
Speaking of Japan, you have a little short story about GMOs and the Japanese Minister of Agriculture.
Yes, on the PFI listserv was posted a lecture, an hour-long lecture by this fabulous, funny fellow named Lynn Clarkson, who's Clarkson Grains in Central Illinois. Now, Lynn is, I would say he's probably the largest grain, corn and soybeans, organic and non-GMO verified dealer, probably in the world. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge business because, of course, it's a smaller market. But Lynn has been doing this for a long time. He's a very experienced fellow. He really has a good, it was all about market overview. But he told this story of, so he's, you know, not that far from St. Louis, and he gets visited by a lot of international grain dealers because, you know, this stuff goes all over the world. And so the Japanese Minister of Agriculture shows up because he's buying organic soybeans to be shipped to Japan. And he gets invited by Monsanto, the Japanese Minister of Agriculture, gets invited for a tour of Monsanto. Now Lynn Clarkson says, of course, he never gets invited, but he goes along once in a while. So he went along with the Japanese minister, and they were having this wonderful tour, and, you know, showed him all of the bells and whistles down there and what they were doing with breeding and this and that. And, you know, I imagine it's a pretty flashy facility. And the Monsanto guy was saying, well, you know, they've been on the market for 13 years and da 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 da. And then he turns to the Japanese agricultural minister and he says, so what do you think of our products? And the Japanese minister, he goes, it's fabulous. It's all very, very interesting. I think what you're doing is quite remarkable. Call me in 17 years and let's see how it's doing. Because in Japan, it's like the precautionary principle. They don't want to introduce a product into their food system for the general population until it has proven healthy and safe for one full generation, which they count as 30 years. So he said, after the technology has been proven for 30 years, they will consider it for the Japanese market.
There it is.
There you have it.
Well, think of that, being a little
cautious. The wisdom of the Japanese.
Oh,
good for them.
Very good. Well, thanks for the information on panna cotta and yuzu. Oh, nice. Nothing like a new taste to enjoy, and we enjoy it a lot. So, thanks for the panna cotta information there, Donna.
It's panna cotta season. It's a good warm weather dessert.
Yeah, yeah. And we think of, I don't know why, we think of June is dairy month. I don't know.
It's sort of, yeah. That's true. I forgot about that.
Coming from Wisconsin, I thought, of course, and that must be in the Bible someplace. I don't know. Okay. And something else we wanted to touch on this time of year, mushrooms. There's a vendor at Farmer's Market, Aaron Johnson, that has a stand that sells mushrooms, and he grows these things. I mean,
Joy Grow Mushrooms.
You can go out and gather in the woods if you want, but he has the art and the skill to actually grow these things off. And so we're thinking about mushrooms and what you can do with them. One thing about mushrooms, people tend to know the little button mushrooms that you get on pizza. You know, that's a mushroom to people. Yeah, there's not much to them.
The creminis and them.
They're fine. And here's a little bit from the wisdom of Hugh Gibbons. And he was a forager, and he talks about food. And it's from his book, Stalking the Wild Asparagus. He says, most people just think of mushrooms as one thing, and you really ought to broaden your horizons a little bit and realize there's all different kinds of things you can do with them and all different kinds of ways that mushrooms taste. He says, a real gourmet will know that the different species of mushrooms are cooked differently and used for different purposes. But so standardized and limited has the average taste become that we tend to judge all mushrooms by how closely the taste resembles that of the cultivated mushroom, which is only one variety, Agaricus, that's probably the little button mushrooms. This is ridiculous. This is bad as a case of an expatriate Englishman I know who judges all vegetables by how near their taste approaches that of Brussels sprouts. You get stuck on one thing. It's nice to try new things. Donna, what did you find out about mushrooms?
Well, you're the mushroom hunter, but I'm really into cooking them. I don't trust myself to... Actually, I should probably go out in the field with you sometime, because until you're with someone who really can identify them and you make yourself familiar with them, it's probably best to just randomly... pluck it and eat it,
There is that bit of the fact that there are some poison mushrooms out there. Don't just be nibbling on things willy-nilly. I have learned from people and gone out with them, and there are like three mushrooms that I am...
Locally.
Locally, right.
Of course, that varies from place to place.
Right.
In terms of the biology... They're fungi are they are not a plant or an animal. They inhabit their own kingdom called the kingdom fungi, which is it now sits along the other great kingdoms of the plantae, the animalia, and two or three other ones. So they are neither plant nor animal, nor rock nor mineral. And one thing that you kind of need to know about them is they are. What you see that you pick is the fruiting body. And underneath the soil is the, what are they called? Let's see. The
mycelium.
Mycelium. Okay. They're largely invisible, but they are nevertheless huge cotton wool mass-like Yes, called mycelium, are mushrooms and toadstools. Are quite simply the reproductive organs or the fruiting bodies of this larger organism. Their sole purpose is to produce and disperse spores, billions of them.
Here's an interesting fact. A fungus known as the honey mushrooms, Amarilla osagii, in the Malheur National Forest in eastern Oregon is thought to be the single largest organism on Earth, roughly 2,400 years old. How do they know this? Roughly 2,400 years
carbon
old.
Carbon testing, right.
It stretches, get this, 3.5 miles across and covers an area larger than 1,600 football fields, most of it hidden underground.
Right. When I once, many, many, many years ago, heard Paul Stamets, who's considered the mushroom expert in maybe in the world, but certainly in America. And he was delivering a lecture, I think at Bioneers or something. And he said that you have to think that underneath the soil, all over the globe, is a complete fungal network.
Oh.
And that it is one of the largest living bodies on the planet.
Oh.
And this is, you know, it's largely invisible to us, but it is a huge part of soil composition. I guess it holds the soil together. I don't really know, but it's something large and very majestic.
Yes, we're learning more and more about the stuff that goes on underneath our feet, all the little microorganisms and the things that digest soil, make soil work and make plants work too.
There's this other little funny book. So I'm reading from the River Cottage Handbook on mushrooms. So the River Cottage is it's an English culinary organization, so it's one of my favorites. But anyway, he's saying, the cell walls are made not from cellulose, as in plants, or protein, as in animals, but of chitin, a material more familiar as the crunchy bit of cockroaches. Their most important property, viewed from an ecological viewpoint, this is mushrooms, is that they have an inability shared with all animals and very few plants to make their own food. They either externally digest organic matter and absorb the resulting simple soluble soup through their cell walls, or they're provided for by the plants in which they have formed the symbiotic relationship.
Oh.
So that's the fungi. That's why they're living on the dead trees. And that's how we get mushrooms.
Isn't that a kingdom fungi? It sounds like something that belongs in a Star Wars movie. You know, kingdom. Okay. All right. Yeah.
There's so about cooking mushrooms. So basically, there's a lot of water in mushrooms. So you want to, I mean, the favorite way of everybody, me included, is to fry them in butter with maybe a little bit of olive oil, but mostly I like just butter, but it's interchangeable. Anyway, you need a good oil and a little bit of garlic and salt and pepper. So that's the, obviously you can make stalks out of the bits as long as they're not too rotten. You can freeze them. And you've had some experience drying them, Lana.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Now, it's seldom that you have too many mushrooms, but mushrooms come in seasons in gluts, and I have had luck drying morels. Just cut them up, put them in a food dryer. And also the pheasant back, a shelf kind of mushroom. Cut them up, put them in the food dryer. And they're really good. You can just eat them as a crunchy sort of thing, but they somehow keep all their flavor. And
just rehydrate them, right?
Put them in soups or stews. Are they a nice thing?
Mushrooms and pasta, classic thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mushrooms and eggs, another classic thing. The mushroom has a subtle flavor. So you can lose that very easily in complex things. However, if you're putting like mushrooms, like a forester's stew, which would probably include, chicken, mushrooms, rosemary, whatever, it does make an undertone or a bass note that is often very good. I'm going to give you a little recipe that I'm going to run home and try. Because Aaron at Joy Grow, he basically sells colors of beautiful little pastel-y oyster mushrooms.
As we mentioned, he grows these. So he not only knows what they are. I mean, he's a wizard. Yes, he is.
Yeah, and you don't have to pick your own. And I like buying the ones from Aaron because it's not what you can find at the supermarket. They are quite delicious and quite beautiful. He's good at growing them. He also grows shiitakes, which are some of my favorite. They have a little stronger flavor than many other kinds of mushrooms. So this is a mushroom pate, and I believe I'm going to make it with his shiitake mushrooms. So it's basically you saute the mushrooms in the butter and the garlic, so it's till they get mushy, and then you put them in the food processor and blend them with cream cheese, salt and pepper, and that's it.
Yum.
So think cream cheese with sautéed mushrooms, and then you just put it in a little jar. You can take it on the picnic, or you can spread it on bread. And I'm going to give it a try, and we'll let you know how it is.
Oh, very good.
A mushroom pâté.
I borrow Donna's books all the time. So I borrowed this River Cottage Handbook Mushrooms by John Wright, introduction by Hugh Fernley Whittingstall. It is a British book, after all. There are some fascinating sort of things. And I ran across a page, and they have nice pictures, too. There's something called the puff burger.
Oh, yes.
Puff burger. I haven't had a puffball mushroom in years.
I can remember as a child my parents finding puffballs and how fun they were as a child. They're usually kind of large-ish, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, oh, 6 inches easily, oh, right?
I remember finding some real honkers. And if you get them at the right stage, so you can just slice them and they're buttery. I mean, they can get too old and too tough. But I remember getting some and they were just perfect. Slice it and fry it up like a hamburger and make a burger out of it. That's called a puff burger. And what I liked about that puff burger recipe, it adds a little bit of bacon and some arugula. Of course, it's going to be good. But this puff burger recipe calls for 2 good soft baps. And now, see, I didn't know what sheared was, and Donna set me straight on that. And I happen to know what a bap is.
And I didn't know what a bap was. B-A-P.
Bap. Isn't that a good word? It is a English roll, a bun,
like a hamburger bun.
Like a hamburger bun. Isn't bap a good word?
A bap.
But, yeah, bap. So a puff, thinking of a puff burger, I suppose any mushroom would do.
I've made them with portobellos.
Yes,
you take
yes.
the large cap, and if you kind of fry them up, mm-hmm, or roast them with a little olive oil and stuff, they do make a very good vegetarian burger.
I like it. Actually, I think this puffball mushroom would be good because that really soaks up the whatever you fry it in.
Yeah. Well, mushrooms goodness. Will do that. They can quite greasy.
And here's something else I had never thought of. A salad of raw mushrooms. Huh?
Now, I've done. Well, or you've seen that. People will chop a few mushrooms into the salad because they do soak up the dressing.
Right. But this is kind of highlighting the mushrooms. And especially if you had different kinds of mushrooms and not put much else in. I mean,
that's true. That would be because you could get different textures and different. So in the Hugh Fernley Whittingstall book, he's got chopped mushrooms and then lots of herbs. Parsley, chervil, chives, sorrel.
Yeah, see?
And
see?
Then olive oil and salt and pepper and Parmesan.
Uh-huh.
Or a little cheddar even, he says. And then you make your regular vinaigrette, you know, olive oil and vinegar with a little mustard. That's actually a very good summery idea. Now you would probably, I don't know, would you want... You'd want to let it sit just, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes to soak it all up and not too long because they would get really soggy.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea.
Try all these things with mushrooms. They don't have to be people think, poison mushrooms. Don't think of that. I mean.
No, just go buy them. If you buy them from Joy Grow, you won't be getting a poison mushroom.
It's true. And it's so, it is wonderful that there are actually people that enjoy doing this and presenting thing. Oh, he also sells, and I never thought of this either, a little kit that you can take home and grow your own. It takes a special growing medium, of course, but it's inoculated and right there on your kitchen counter.
Oh, that's a fun project for children particularly. And for all of us who need to know that our food is something that's grown. It doesn't just appear in the supermarket.
Yeah.
So there you go. And in your supermarket, look at the mushroom selection. Don't just always go for the creminis or the buttons. Try some of the other ones. We're getting more and more different kinds. What are those little skinny ones? Gnocchi ones? Have you tried those?
Oh,
they're like
yeah.
long stringy with teeny weeny heads. I don't know, like quarter inch heads or something.
Oh, really? I haven't seen a see another odd looking.
Yep. Yep.
Alien looking beast that we can eat.
It is.
Oh my goodness. And the stuff has got the same makeup as cockroach skins, eh?
Chitin.
Oh, chitin. Ooh.
But it's not crunchy like cockroach skins.
No.
But I believe I've forgotten exactly why, but I believe mushrooms are quite good for you.
Well, I think they are, because they taste good.
Yeah.
I want to mention that the Practical Farmers of Iowa 2019 Field Day Guide is out, and you can find out more
at
practicalfarmers.org.
Practical Farmers of Iowa does these trips to farms, mostly all over Iowa, where you can learn a lot about agriculture. And it's not just for farmers. If you're interested in knowing, because this is an agricultural state and a lot goes on around us, that's pretty... There's a lot of science, there's a lot of biology, and I love visiting farms. And every farm is different, and every farmer and farm, whether it's a man or a woman, they're usually a character because they have to kind of invent and grow in a way that fits their piece of land.
Yes, and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on this summer. And really, the membership of Practical Farmers of Iowa, a fine organization, has grown and grown, and many of the members are not farmers. They're eaters. They're consumers. And you get to learn a lot from all kinds of people, yes. There's one tomorrow, and there's one Friday. And so go to practicalfarmers.org to find out more. And there's,
right, you can see cows and pigs and vegetables and grains and... And cover crops.
And some pretty Iowa countryside. And hint, hint, there's usually a nice meal attending.
That's right. Huh? That's right.
Food?
It's always an interesting crowd of people.
Food is good.
And there's usually a meal. So it's community.
Good. So today we talked about mushrooms, and we talked about feta cheese, and we took a little stroll up and down Farmer's Market. There's an upcoming event this coming Friday, June 7th.
Oh, right, the annual Art Walk
in downtown Ames. From 5 o'clock to 8 p.m. Lots of artists, and the stores are open. People can stroll around. It's usually a lovely evening. There's artists to see. And I noticed that Ursula Rudenberg, our manager here at the station, already has got the art materials out and the banner.
Yes, we make a big mural in the station every year. It's a different mural. And you can come in and paint. And your children can come in and paint.
Yeah, so come and make a mess. And listen to Red's band. The blues band is playing here, too.
Oh, during Art Walk, we're having Red's band?
Yeah.
Live music at KHOI.
And if that doesn't get you inspired to splash some paint around, I don't know what. Yes, it does. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI, and we are Tasty Radio. We come to you every Tuesday at noon. We're repeated at 7 p.m. or anytime. You can listen anytime on your device. You can go to khoifm.org. You can stream. You can find out all the other fine programs there. Put us on your iPad, your phone, your whatever you've
got. In your ears.
And in your ears. And if we are in your ears, put us in your heart and support this fine radio station. Community radio station means that we are supported by fine people just like you. So enjoy this fine summer coming up and visit a farmer's market and meet a farmer face to face. Yes, you can do that. You can contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com. support this fine station. We had music today by Liz Carroll. Some good Celtic fiddling. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Fine engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.